Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Tony Martinetti. As a leadership advisor, best-selling author, podcast host, and speaker, he combines over 30 years of business and leadership experience with an insatiable curiosity. His aim is to elevate and transform leaders, equipping them with the tools to navigate change and unlock their true potential. Tony shares how burnout led him to rethink success and how conversation helped him reconnect with what really mattered. Together, he and Dane explore why so many teams avoid the one thing that could build trust and clarity, slowing down to talk about what matters. They discuss how play, creativity, and storytelling rituals like Tony's campfire sessions can deepen connection and help teams see each other in new ways. Plus, Tony offers a reminder that good leadership starts with asking yourself what you're tolerating and choosing to design something different. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Tony Martinetti. Tony is a man of many talents. He is the Chief Illumination Officer at Inspired Purpose Partners. So it's a new title we're going to dive into today. Author twice over, best-selling author, Climbing the Right Mountain and Campfire Lessons for Leaders, with a third book on the way. A podcast host, the Virtual Campfire podcast, and also a TEDx speaker. So, Tony, you've been really busy. What is it that brought you to be doing all of this awesome work?
I love to be in motion, and I just like creating. So yeah, that's me.
That's what I've enjoyed about listening to some of your podcasts, is that you'll bring on creatives, writers, and otherwise, and it's wonderful to just kind of pause and kind of dig into their inspirations.
Yeah. There's something about, you know, being in community with people that you take on, you know, cues from other people, but then you bring it back and you say, oh, like, now I want to go and do something. I'm riffing off of their ideas. The energy becomes almost, there's no loss of energy when you are with people who do cool things.
Absolutely. And I saw one of your really cool posts. Like, so much of your writing is wonderful. I find it very energizing.
Thank you.
But there was a piece the other day when you said, connection's not a task, it's a source of transformation. And that kind of builds on that point you just made. Like, you can learn something and bounce off something from anyone in this world if you open yourself to it.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. So where did it all start? How did you come to find this path of illumination?
Yes, I love that this title now that I'm owning, which I mentioned to you pre-call that this is a new title for me. Yeah. But it really fits because my life has been illuminated through a journey of getting here. I started as an artist who thought was going to be an architect of sorts, and then, you know, found myself, well, people telling me, hey, you should go do something that's going to make you money. You know, you got to do something responsible. And I fell in the trap that we all fall into. I went pre-med and then eventually realized that pre-med was not going to be for me. So I switched majors into business and then landed into a career in biotech for about 25 years. So I spent most of my journey working in finance and strategy in biotech. Interesting.
It's super interesting. I know when you and I first met, I was like, you don't strike me as a finance guy, Tony.
Yeah, but I played one on TV for a long time. And and I, you know, the reality is I was rewarded for it. I mean, people would promote me and I, you know, kind of did what I needed to do. And I'll be honest, and I'm not afraid to own the mantle of I'm a pretty smart guy. I can figure things out. But at the end of the day, even if you're smart, that doesn't mean you should do it, right? Sometimes we fall into this, like, you know, working hard to do something that you can do, but then you realize that underneath all of that is this burnout that starts to show up, this sense of unfulfillment, which is probably one of the worst burnouts you can have, is a sense that like you're working hard and then also realizing that the burnout's coming from not the hard work, but from the sense of like just not feeling connected to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's very real. And I think a lot of people have found themselves in that position as leaders, as teams, particularly with all of the change we've gone through in the world in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
How did that bring about your pivot, your shift?
Yes. Well, I talk about this idea of being, you know, a little burnt out, and, you know, I start to get to this place of having all of the color leave my life. I just felt like I fell in a pattern where I felt as though everything was just, okay, just rinse, wash, and repeat, keep on going. And on the outside, people said, oh, you know, looks like he's doing well. But on the inside, I just felt like I've lost all the color in my life. Mm. And I was depressed, kind of lost the desire to move on. And, you know, I don't want to get too drab on this, but that's the reality. I just didn't feel connection to who I was. And so I knew something had to change. And so I started to, you know, see therapists and do, you know, read an unhealthy amount of self-help books, all that kind of fun things.
Yeah.
And, you know, finally started to move up out of the valley, out of the, you know, the very low point of my life, and started to see possibilities. But I still wasn't there yet. The moment came for me when I was sitting in a boardroom of a biotech company and I said, I can't do this any longer, and decided to walk out. I was sitting with a few leaders in the room who just, I couldn't see how they were inspiring to people. They were more concerned with making money, more concerned about looking good. And I said, enough is enough. I need to leave this room to change this room. And that's what had me deciding that my next move would be about changing the way people experience life. And that's what was the big moment for me, is that I had had some moves along the way that said life has to be different for me. And now I needed to be the change that I wanted to see in the world was me.
Love it.
So
that's really powerful too. And having come from that boardroom environment in finance and strategy roles, I would imagine it's given you an edge, because you can come in and understand where they're at and what they're afraid of before you start kind of doing the real work on, but what do you really want? Who really are you?
Exactly. And I won't say it was easy. That perspective was wonderful, but also I had to deal with my own demons, of course. You know, deciding to make this change, it was scary, because I was like, well, who am I to do all this? And imposter syndromes seeped in. And what I did, and it's actually something that I continue to do, is I got in conversation. You know, that's my mantra, is that when you feel stuck, get in conversation. And that's what I do. Is I started to talk to people, and I started to listen to their challenges of saying like, oh, you know, what is your experience at work? Are you, you know, maybe I'm alone. Maybe I was an N of one, that I was the only one who experienced bad leadership and decided that I would leave the work. But as I was having conversations, I was hearing a lot of patterns showing up. And so that's what got me to realize I'm onto something. And maybe there is something to the fact that people, you know, follow a path and then they realize it's not right for them, and that they just continue to do it because they feel like there's no other choice but to do what they had chosen.
Yes.
So a long answer to your question, but you know, that's what I needed to do, is I needed to get some answers and then maybe provide some answers.
Yeah. So that mantra of like getting into conversation, I find that fascinating in teams in particular. I think it's a big gap. I think in teams, we can all be very, very task focused. This is my task, that's your task. And we don't create enough time for that conversation about each other, about why we're doing a task in a certain way, or around what that customer really wants. There's just, to your point, the conversation can solve almost every problem that we're banging our heads against the wall to get through on most days.
Yeah, and the most logical reason why is because it takes time, and people feel like time is something that they don't want to spend. They don't want to spend time to have the conversation. But the reality is that time is so well spent because it will, in the long term, save lots of frustration. And it'll build relationships that will create much more impact, much more fulfillment, because you'll have relationships that will transcend not just the moment, but the long term.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that connection is huge. I think also it actually came up on a show I recently did, the mattering that it brings to a team, that I don't just belong here. I'm not just someone who people accept and appreciate for being here, but I actually matter. The work that I do is important to other people. Like, that's just so lacking in so many teams.
Totally. I mean, it's just getting to know people is so critical. And maybe I'll just segue just for a moment into my TED talk, which was, my TED talk is Don't Check Yourself at the Door, How to Bring Your True Self into the Workplace. Now, it's not just about, I'll share, elements about, simple things about myself, but it's about just bringing some of the elements of your hobbies and your outside world into work. Because when people get to know you, there's an opening that happens. People see you as more than just one dimension. They see you as multidimensional. And that also invites them to do the same. And and now you're not just a teammate, you're actually a human being. Yeah.
That's a huge one. I've got a very good friend and teammate, Eric. And the running joke inside is that a lot of people that meet him for the first time, they'll call him RoboCop, because he is like wicked smart. And he just is very methodical in his ways, very practical in his ways of thinking. But he's become one of my best friends. And interestingly, as we've got to work each other, we've learned different things about each other, where we're different, where we're similar, what we enjoy. And as you start to see these little snippets of what your teammate's doing outside of work, what matters to them, it actually gives you so much more appreciation, not only for who they are, but like, hey, this is a really good question that I might be able to ask Eric today.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have otherwise thought of it. And likewise, he can then come and ask questions for me, and we can be really vulnerable with each other. So just to your point, taking time's hard, but making time is really important, particularly if you're in these key leadership roles where you're responsible for the livelihood and well-being of all of these other team members.
Exactly. I mean, just even thinking about ways to leverage, we always say about strengths that people have, which is wonderful. But the idea is you get to know, hey, that little hobby or that thing that someone had done in their past, they can bring that to the workplace. Like if someone has been in their past, maybe they've been a chess player, and let's organize a chess tournament, and it would be wonderful to have Joe be the person who runs a chess club or whatever. And that's just a weird example, but the idea is, could be any number of things. It could be a trivia club about our company that would be a fun thing to put in place, that someone used to be running pub trivia at, outside of work.
Interestingly, at Google, another good friend of mine, Dr. Andre Martin, was there at Google for a while, and they had this G2G marketplace, which was for Googlers. And originally, they thought it was going to be like, hey, Tony's over here in finance and strategy, but he's an excellent coach, and he can come and coach you internally. Mm-hmm. But the next thing you know, people are selling succulents in coffee cups and all of these other little arts and crafts and things that they can do for each other. Mm. And he said the unintended consequence of that was that it created this this community, this connection, this kind of inspiration for doing some things differently or for breaking down some cross-departmental barriers.
Yeah. Like you create these like lunch and learns, like, pottery shop with Tony or, pottery shop with Dane or, there's so all cool. These really cool, fun things that, and what happens, it's not just that, on the surface, we're doing pottery. It's that Dane becomes alive inside and he's bringing himself into the workplace. And so the one of the classic examples was I had a data scientist I was working with. She was very quiet. She's from China originally. So she had this real, like, you know, very quiet demeanor. And I found out that she played the violin. Actually, she was not just playing the violin, but she was a fantastic violinist. And when I challenged her, say, what happens if you were to share that with the people around you? She did. What happened as a consequence of her sharing is that she started to build her confidence. And now she's like speaking up more, becoming more of a outspoken at work, which is exactly what I was hoping for, is that she would become more open at work. People showed up to her concerts. They would, champion her. It was wonderful.
Yeah. So. And that brings out that confidence in the tasks of the work. Now it's not just confidence about playing violin. It just lifts, it elevates the human, doesn't it?
Exactly. And what else are we here for?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that. I'm fascinated by that. And going back to your TED talk on bringing your true self to work, I wonder, are there any particular programs or initiatives that you've seen teams and leaders roll out to try and bring more of that to the forefront?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not to be, self-promoting too much, but I'll just say I put a program together when I launched my second book, and I call them campfire sessions. Basically what they were was, basically coming together in organizations to share stories. And the stories weren't just like random stories. It was about, going back and unearthing moments in our past that make us who we are today. We had to create the container first. So you have to create that intimacy of, okay, we're coming together. This is not just happening in the day-to-day business. It's happening in an intimate setting, but it's really about allowing them to share, what were the moments that made me come today to where I am? The flashpoints. And when they do, what happens is they start to see people differently. People share stories about, I wasn't born here in this country, or I was, the journey that got me here. Now people see them differently, and that's wonderful. I just did a workshop like this, not a campfire particularly, but a similar type of journey, but using drawing and painting to get people to share their stories. And at the end of the session, someone said to me, "This is the most emotional experience I've had at work." And I was like, "Well, that's fantastic. I love that. I love hearing that."
Yeah. And actually, there's something, I've had a few guests on that talk about the creativity of drawing, painting, sculpting, Lego, you name it. But there's something about doing the creative that takes you to a very different place.
Yeah.
Which then allows you to talk more about something that traditionally you put your corporate sort of coat of armor on around.
Yes. We got to bring our guard down a little bit. I mean, it's not like we have to be in a place where we're going to share, weird facts about ourselves. We have to, we have to make sure we're careful not to be too out there, but That's sharing true. From a place of service, of helping other people see you.
That's a really interesting choice of words there, Tony, too, sharing from a place of service. So it's not sharing from a place of ego.
Yes.
It's not sharing from a place of entertainment. Coming from Australia, we all like to be fairly self-deprecating. And
all poppies.
Exactly. And we're good at telling stories of our imminent and past failures. But actually, that's not serving anyone.
Yeah.
And we can think more completely, more wholesomely around, what stories may be in service of myself and others.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Super cool. Yeah. So Campfire Lessons for Leaders was very much around that. Was it the book that led into the podcast, or had you already started the podcast?
Other way around. The podcast was, I'll give you the founding story of the podcast. I never thought in my ever that I would start a podcast. I didn't listen to podcasts. I was just, if I was going to be listening to anything, it was going to be music, because I'm a music, fanatic, all different genres. And so the idea of the podcast came from something I wanted to create pre-COVID. And that was bringing people together to have conversations. And I decided to shelve that. It was actually called, I had a name for it. It was called Divergent Minds, Convergent Hearts.
Love it.
The whole concept was bringing people who think differently together. And at the end, hoping that they have this mutual respect for each other, that they will, you know, be able to understand and honor each other. They yeah. don't have to think the same way, but they can at least honor each other. But that became the virtual campfire because the COVID just made it hard for us to have those types of situations.
Yeah.
So the virtual campfire was born out of this idea of wanting to bring people into a space to share intimate stories like we would at a campfire. And it became, you know, crafted by this idea of, I see these amazing people. Like I think about Simon Sinek was probably one of the models when I think about it. It's like he, you know, had this amazing TED Talk. You see him, you know, sharing all these ideas, but you know, he was just a guy, you know, just yeah. had a story and he shared it in a very small little stage. And now he's a big deal. Well, I mean, we all have humble beginnings, right? And so when I think about, you know, people showing up on stage, we want to know what got them there. And so that's what the campfire was about, is the moments that have revealed their gifts into the world. That's the premise. And yeah. the book was basically something that happened many years later when I said, wow, I had over 200 some odd conversations, now almost 300 conversations. And I just felt like it was an obligation. I had to share that with a broader audience, and I had to find a way to put it into a context that would allow people to really see them, the stories come alive.
That's brilliant. And for anyone out there that hasn't tuned in, the Virtual Campfire podcast is a great listen, really good mm-hmm. range of guests. And I like the way, Tony, that you bring a lot of light to you know, what's going on for the individual, where their work comes from, where their work's going. It's awesome.
Well, thank you so much. It has really been, you know, a gift to me, and hopefully it's been a gift to others. But I mean, I start with the intention of what lights me up, and I think that's yep. the starting point. And if I have the intention of really helping the person who's on the other side of the mic, that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's powerful. So going into some of those teams there then with these campfire sessions, have you found that they've been sort of a one-time event and then it's lifted some mattering, some awareness, some connection, and they've gone forward? Or do you find that some of those teams will sort of memorialize that type of activity and make it a, you know, an annual cycle or something that they bring into teams at different times of the year, strategic planning or otherwise? I know you had time and strategy yourself. Like, where does it work if I'm a leader out there right now thinking, hey, I'd like to try some of this?
Yeah, sometimes it's, if you think about the whole analogy of fire, it's like, it's almost like I have to give them the kindling to get the fire started. But then what happens is it's their responsibility to keep it going. And right. so I give them the tools to be able to say, how do I ensure that things can keep going? I don't want them to have to be continuing to pay me to come in and foster these things for every time that they have new people or they want to make sure that they're doing things. So I try to give them the tools to maintain what we created. Mm-hmm. But I think the starting point is to make sure we create the space that allows this thing to really take off. And so that's what I do. I foster that beginning process that yep. gets them catalyzed in the right direction.
That's neat. And then what are the stages or the life cycle that might bring a leader or a team back into that sort of virtual campfire environment? Is it a new team member coming on? Is it an end of year? Do you see some things work better than others, seasons?
It really depends. I mean, it could be a situation where they're going through a new change and they realize that there's a desire to change the way that their story is being told as a company. And it could be a change in management, or it could be the fact that they have a new people on board. A team's changed a lot and they want to make sure that people are seeing each other. But you know, if a team has just been together for a while and they just feel like, yeah, we just need to to keep this flame a-going, part of my language, but like the flame a-going is it's just maybe, you know, hey, let's touch base again and let's make sure that we're seeing what's really still with us. You know, what's happening with each other? Is there anything new that we want to celebrate, connect with, hear from each other? Because it has been a while since we've started this.
That's cool. And are you seeing, from an efficacy standpoint, that when companies can make the time to do this in person, that has a bigger lift, or is it just as easy to do virtually?
Virtually, just it works fine. I mean, obviously, it's always better in person. You know, and there's nothing better than in person because you have this real emotional charge of being in person, and it's even better with a real fire. So let's be honest. But virtual can happen. And, you know, I think it just depends on A, the intention, and B, the energy you create with the right people in the room. You know, if you have a bunch of people show up who just were like, oh, this, what is this? And, you know, or we're just, I'm too busy. And they start to kind of like zone out for the moment. You have to make sure that you as the facilitator and you as the leader who is bringing people together have really put in place this idea of like, look, we're coming together for a real reason. This is not just your phone it in kind of situation. We have to bring the space. We have to set the intention really well.
That's neat. And will you ever tie it to an actual, you know, strategy offsite, or does it tend to stand alone?
As long as it's not like just weaved in, like, hey, let's spend 15 minutes doing this and then we'll get into strategy. Yeah, you really have to create this as almost a ritual type of situation, because that's what it's meant for. If you're just, it can be part of a strategy offsite. It just has to be something that you do on its own within that.
But maybe you do it, you fly everyone in on the Wednesday, you do one of these sessions Wednesday night, and then you kick work off on Thursday. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, in many ways, that's a great way to do it because you've now put people into a mode of like connection that allows them to say, like, now as we talk about things like strategy, we're in a place where we're feeling and seeing people differently.
I know pre-show, Tony, we were talking about like what's just capturing your attention, what's exciting you now, and it kind of builds on this campfire, but you actually surprised me. You said it's not just slowing down, it's the importance of play together.
Yeah.
So maybe you can expand on that, because I'm excited to dive into play. That's one of my favorite weapons.
Yeah. I mean, this sense of, as we get older, we just feel the sense of like, oh, we have to go, and, let's execute. And it's hard to get out of that trap, right? And I'll just kind of like riff on something that I used to always reflect on myself. I was addicted to doing. And it was I had a hard time just being. And I think play allows us to get out of the doing mode and allow us to just be imperfect and allow us to just do something, not for the sake of being perfect, just allow it to just flow. And play is that way. It's kind of like what you were saying earlier about the art move. When I bring people together to do things where they're drawing and painting, the first thing people do is they tense up because they're like, oh my God, I don't draw, I don't paint. But the reality is I get them to say, look, this is not about being perfect. It's about expression. And expression is a form of play. And we need more of that. Slowing down, allowing yourself into that space. And what I often do with that is I actually use music to get them into that mood.
Oh, tell me more about that. So how does that kind of interweave?
Well, when people listening to music, it just allows them to feel the sense of like, well, I'm not in the work zone any longer. I'm not in the mode of like, we are, in this tense environment. You have to create the environment that allows them to feel as though, oh, I'm at ease. I'm allowing myself to just, flow. And so I put music on that allows them to feel a little bit more of a mood that gets them into that flow of we're playing.
I love that. Yeah. It's a good prop. Mm. Yeah. That's interesting. Talking about other props, one of my favorite forms of play is dressing up.
Yes.
And it's so much fun. And it allows you to not take yourself too seriously. Like, I can't think of anything worse. Early in my career, not only did I have to wear a suit every day, but my shoes had to be black. My belt had to be black. Like, you had to wear cufflinks. It was next level.
Yeah.
And then as I've gone through life, I've realized, actually, I like to wear colors and comfortable fitting clothes and things that are more expressive of, like, my joy and energy on this planet. So it's fascinating how we've somehow crafted industry where, you know, wearing a suit and tie is deemed to be turning up as your most professional self. I think it's a total fraud.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that at the very least we've changed as a society. You know, you don't see that as much as you used to.
No.
I think, I remember my days where my first job was working at Gillette. Yeah. And I was working in the suit and tie days where every day I'd have to show up in suit and tie. And it just felt like very stifling. And so now I'm glad that we've started to relax that and feel a little bit more at ease. So I'm glad that we're in that mode. But I think we just need to make sure that their mindset stays with that too. Is that it doesn't mean about being relaxed all the way through, meaning, let's be accountable to doing good work.
Yeah.
But let's figure out, how do we want to choose our battles, right? Like, why care about, stifling us in terms of how we show up? But instead, let's make sure that we're, allowing people to express themselves through the work.
Yeah, the way I like to mix that up is we're not just going to dress up and go and drink. We're actually going to dress up and do real work. So we're in Palm Springs last year in November for a quarterly board meeting. And the house that we rented, it was more of a compound to do the meetings at, they actually had a dress-up room. It was amazing. So I led off the opening and I walked into the dress-up room and I was like, okay, for every meeting today, you have to, whoever the presenter is, has to go and pick up, an outfit, and then you have to do your presentation in the outfit. So we were doing real work, dressed up as all sorts of things, soldiers, awesome. Princesses, you name it. And I thought it landed pretty well.
That's so cool. It would be interesting to see that, if you had a presentation day where everyone had to present, but instead of, putting on a suit and tie to present to the board, but you instead had to dress up as some character and just see what would happen.
It would be awesome.
Yeah.
It just brings a slightly different energy. And going back to one of the words we touched on at the beginning of the show, I actually think it creates a bit more curiosity in the moment, because all of a sudden you're like, this isn't normal. What else is different? What else might we be able to change if we just changed how someone's dressed at the front of the room? What else is possible?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Love that.
That's super cool.
I always like to explore possibilities. That's what I'm all about.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally. And then, so we've talked about the TEDx, we've talked about Campfire Lessons for Leaders, Climbing the Right Mountain. What was the inspiration and sort of direction of that book?
Yeah, I contain multitudes, my friend. I climbed a lot of mountains in my life, and the last mountain I climbed was Kilimanjaro, which was a few years ago. I've also climbed some mountains that weren't so successful. The first one was when I was a teenager. We went and climbed Mount Washington, which is near where I live, and it was unsuccessful. And I learned lessons about how there's certain things about climbing that obviously are analogies for life. Mm-hmm. And I came up with this idea that if you're not prepared for the climb, you're going to fail. If you don't have the right people with you, you're not going to do well.
Yeah.
There's things about a successful climb, and there's things about a not so successful climb. And so it's not that the book is about climbing. It's just that I learned along the way, how do we think about our own journey through life and our definitions of success through thinking, how are we looking at this world of the journey through our career through the lens of climbing. And so the book is really just founded on this, how do I navigate differently? How do I climb differently? And, if I'm on the climb, how do I ensure that I'm on the right mountain for me?
Yeah.
And how am I defining that on my own terms, not based on someone else's terms? As you can see from my own journey, I had that definition of success was based on other people's expectations of what I should do. And then I started to change that.
Yeah.
And I started to see different results.
Big time. Hmm. I like the agency that brings in to the individual, but also to the team members. It seems to be a common theme in all of these elements we've talked to today, Tony, which is like, how do we let people show up as their more authentic self so that they can make their decisions, not the decisions that are, expected of them, or at least they think are expected of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even, to the extent where people often think, well, once you get into that C-suite, then it has to be a certain way, that it's going to be really hard. And let's be honest, the facts are that a lot of people are not stepping into the C-suite. They're afraid to. They just don't want to. There seems to be a fear that once you're in the C-suite, then, your life is going to be very different. And sure, it is. But what if you chose to do it differently?
Yeah.
What if you chose to set boundaries and say, this is how I'm going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is very cool. Have you had any leaders that you've worked with that have done a good job of that? And how did their team react initially and then over time?
Yeah, some more successful than others.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because you have to also be cognizant of the environment around you, including your board.
Yeah.
If you don't have a board around you that's supportive of your thinking, then they're going to challenge you and potentially, have you hit the road.
Yeah.
So you have to really think about changing your environment as well as you're changing yourself.
Yeah.
And then you become successful in that path. But ultimately, the starting point is to start to design around that. And so, I choose that word design so thoughtfully because it starts with this first discovering what it is that you want and how you want to show up, then distilling it, thinking about these elements of, essential elements you want to have in your world.
Yeah.
And then you design around that. And that's how you become successful.
Interesting.
In doing that work. But I've definitely seen some good examples of people who have done it well.
Yeah.
And I've also seen that it's hard. It doesn't take, it's not just one and done.
I love the fact that you called out very appropriately that it might be what you want, but you might not be in the right environment. That's so important. And I think it brings a question to mind for any leader or team that's trying to drive this, which is, if we can't shape the right environment where we are, because oftentimes you can with some time, then what are the hard decisions you've got to make about changing your environment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is an act of agency as well. I mean, we said earlier, it takes a lot of courage, but it's an act that is well worth it if you feel like you're in a place that's just not allowing you to be yourself and to live the life that you really want.
Yeah.
Because there are options out there.
Yeah.
And you can create a path of your own.
Yeah. And where you've seen a leader do better at that in setting some boundaries and designing how they're going to show up, how does that cascade down into team members? Is it become something that's, a team sport?
100%. And I love that you bring that up because this is exactly what we need to do. We need to model the way, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that also goes the other way around too, which is to say, if you see people who are acting a certain way, then you start to say, oh, that's acceptable. And
setting norms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite coaching questions and, that I think helps a lot of people see things differently is, what are you tolerating that you shouldn't? The reason why I ask that is because sometimes I see leaders putting up with a lot of stuff and then they realize that pattern that they put up with gets repeated over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And now they've got this systemic challenge that they need to deal with. Well, it's because they tolerated it in the first place. And maybe they tolerated it themselves first and foremost. And that's the problem, right?
100%. Yeah. Even like working, I was lucky to be at Transform this year with Meeta Malik, and she wrote the book, The Devil Emails at Midnight. I was like, oh man, I feel so afraid of having this conversation, because I've been the email at midnight boss so many times in my life. But it was cool the way we sat and looked at that and just said, you know, it's very easy as a leader to think I'm doing all of this work to benefit the team and the company, but then you realize you're just damaging the team and the company through the way of your showing up.
Yeah, what is the old saying? Like the road to the hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah. You totally see it. Totally see it. And they all see you doing it, and then the next thing you know, you've got team members unloading on each other at all sorts of times of the day.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's important for us to sometimes, before we start to, you know, beat other people up about the things they're doing, is maybe we start to look inside and say, what am I doing that potentially is causing the very problem that we're seeing?
Yeah.
You know? And actually that comes back to a good friend of mine, Jerry Colonna, who says that, you know, how am I implicit in creating the conditions that I have?
Yeah.
I'm butchering it. Sorry, Jerry. But you know, we're always implicit in creating the conditions of what we're experiencing.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. My coach will work me through that. If I'm having a bad day, he's like, what is it that is causing you to choose to have this bad day? And I'm like, what do you mean? This customer just called and said this. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I've got choice here. I've got agency.
Yeah.
Very cool. So, it's been a really cool conversation, Tony. I think if anyone's out there looking to, connect with your writing, the TED Talk, the books, what's the best way for them to find you?
Well, I guess the best place would be to start at my website, which is iPurposePartners.com and LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I'm always sharing new things and sharing other people's stuff as well. So, you know, come check me out. I've got a newsletter called Sparks of Inspiration.
Yep.
So come check it out, and you might find some cool artwork there too. I'm always sharing something interesting art-wise. And I've been writing poetry. That's my
I saw a poem the other day.
Yeah, my new fun thing I like to tap into.
That's awesome. That's so cool, Tony. I mean, I've had such a good time diving into your story, this whole piece around connection, around play, I love the way that your story was one of personal transformation, supporting the transformation of others, leaders, and teams. I mean, it is a huge opportunity that all leaders and teams have to create, you know, better outcomes from the workplace in everyday life, not just bottom line impact, but it can be both.
Yeah. We can do good for ourselves and we can do good for our companies and others. Yeah.
Yeah. Neat. All right. Well, I look forward to catching you in Boston sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tony.
Take care.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time.